trustworthy information. How can we as citizens make any decisions about anything, but most particularly how we vote? The leaders in our communities, states, and in our country. So the press, a free, trusted press, is absolutely essential to a democracy. We've always known that, and now we have a threat to that in a way that probably hasn't existed before. And yes, it causes fear, but I'm trying to respond to it by being more fearless and speaking up all the more for the kind of work that you and Democracy Now! Do, Amy.
Pat Mitchell, author of Becoming a Dangerous Woman, Embracing Risk to Change the World. She's former first woman president of PBS and chair of the Sundance Institute. Go to democracynow.org for part one of our interview, where she talks about her own life story and describes her arrest in Washington, D.C. earlier this month with Jane Fonda and more than 140 other people in a climate protest, Fire Drill Fridays. Oh, and tune in to our New Year's Day special Wednesday. 2020 marks the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed women the right to vote. We begin the new decade with an hour-long special about one of the most influential women in U.S. politics, First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. After the death of her husband, President Franklin Roosevelt, she spearheaded the U.N. Declaration of Human Rights. President Truman called her the First Lady of the World. And that does it for our show. Happy birthday, Chuck Skirich. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Trina Nadura, Tamarie Astudio, Adriana Contreras, and Maria Tarasena. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thanks so much for joining us.
We're all looking for ways to get more mileage from a gallon of gas. I'm Energy Secretary Sam Bodman with steps you can take to save money by getting the most out of every gallon of gas that you buy. First, keeping your car tuned and in proper working condition can improve gas mileage by up to 40%. Replacing your air filter and keeping tires properly inflated improves fuel efficiency. When you can, avoid idling your car. Running your engine when you're not moving wastes gas and money. Obey the speed limit. Speeding reduces fuel mileage by up to 23%. Your gas mileage decreases rapidly once you get above 60 miles an hour. You have the power to make a difference. By taking these steps, you can save money and help our nation reduce its energy use.
For more tips on saving money at the gas pump, please visit our website at www.energy.gov or call toll-free 1-877-337-3463. This powerful savings message is provided by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Alliance to Save Energy.
Toys, tapestries, and tea kettles, clothing, cameras, and kitchenware, Levi's, lace, and lava lamps. You can find just about anything at a thrift store. Quality used goods at great prices. But did you also know that the environment gets a good deal too when you shop at a reused business, such as thrift stores, resale shops, and consignment stores? Keeping used stuff in circulation instead of throwing it away helps save energy, natural resources, and landfill space. It's called reuse. And remember, old stuff is good stuff, so choose to reuse.
Yeah, and you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 p.m. Time for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. And there you go, the entire theme, because we're busy rebuilding the studio while it's playing. Why do you need an 8.5-minute theme, people ask? Because we don't just do the show when we come here. We do all kinds of other things, including remembering to record the show. Kyle, why don't you speak up while I plug in the recording devices? I forgot to install them.
What you're referring to is some maintenance I'm doing on the armature. A lot of people don't know this, but we're not holding the microphones while we broadcast. They actually are held for us. And those are not volunteers. It's actually a
freshman. Thank you very much for that. They didn't go home this break.
No, it's good to keep them occupied, stay out of trouble. But no, in this case, there's an armature and there's a little pin and it has a little knurled bit. And I noticed it was coming out. And what's going to happen is eventually that's going to fail, and then this thing's going to be busted. And all the guests will, I guess, have to hold their own microphones or get those freshmen back to do it for them. But I hate to see such good equipment here. Apparently it's proudly made in America. Fall apart. I guess from overuse, people bending it and adjusting it. You hear that?
It sounds awful.
Oh yeah, that's like a knee replacement that needs to happen. But
okay,
in this case,
I finally got the show recording starting now. So when you hear the word "now," that's when our trusty Jens far away is piecing together parts of the archive with parts of our recording equipment. So now we're recording the way we should have been from the beginning. A little bit of technical information that you don't need to know.
So there you have it. You have a little bit of background about what we do when we're not just discussing things, and also how we come up with complete shows.
Last show of the decade.
The whole theme. Yeah.
The last show of the decade.
I was.
Or is it?
Impressive, isn't it?
Is it the last show of the decade, Kyle?
Is this a trick question?
No, it's a question.
Why?
Because apparently that's open to contention.
How?
Well, I found a story because I was curious about this myself, because I've lectured a few people about this, but then I checked to see if my lecturing was in fact correct. Turns out, on this issue, there are two teams: Team Zero and a Team One. It's interesting they spell out Zero.
Do people not have anything better to do?
No, they don't. They spell out the word Zero and they write the numeral One. And that's a whole other thing. We can get into that later. But basically, there are those who believe the new decade will begin after midnight on the upcoming New Year's Eve. That is tonight. And those who believe that the new decade will begin when 2021 begins. Because I agree with these people. The first year was the year one, wasn't the year zero? You know, we weren't around, but pretty sure that when they started this whole thing, they said, okay, here we go. This is the first year, okay. One. So that is when the decade begins. That's when the century begins. That's when the millennium begins, with one, not with zero.
But does the distinction affect anything? Is this just about bickering over being right about something? I mean,
well,
really?
When you say the new decade's impact about to begin, I'm just trying to point out that that's not correct.
But don't you understand, like, correct speak and people having problems with the way words are formed from other people, like, is exactly what's wrong with the...
It's what our civilization is based upon, Kyle. If we don't correct people constantly, what do we have?
Sanity?
What's left? Sanity. Overrated. Believe me. In a recent YouGov survey, I just like the name of that, YouGov, 64% of Americans said the next decade will begin on January 1st, 2020. That's tomorrow. And end on December 31st, 2029. But nearly 20% said they weren't sure. Slightly fewer people said the next decade won't start until January 1st, 2021. So I know, I'm in the minority. I'm used to it. But
it's all made up. Who really cares?
On this question, not your question, but this question, many voices of authority are with the minority. Isn't that always the way? Yeah. They say that because there was no year zero when the current era began more than 2,000 years ago, all decades, centuries, and millennia begin with year one. It's almost an exact quote of what I just said. I'm proud of that. The next decade won't start until January 1st, 2021. Sandy Duncan. She was an actress. Well, okay, this is somebody else, apparently. The managing editor of the Farmer's Almanac. The Farmer's Almanac, Kyle.
Yeah.
I mean, we respect them, right?
No, I'm not done with this decade. I think that
You have another year, then.
No, that's fine. I'm okay with it, but I don't really care about the distinction as much. I mean, there's plenty, I think, that did not get done in this 10 years that we could make up for, so I'm happy to hear there's more time. And frankly, because so little actually was accomplished, that's good. That's good to hear. But does it really matter? If it was ending, I'd be like, wow, that was a lame decade.
Uh-huh. Well,
make the new one better. But okay, fine. We can still finish this one off. But again, it's arbitrary.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because people say they use the term decades to discuss culture, chunks of history. It should run from 0 to 9, like, you know, the 20s. Yeah, how could 1920 not be a part of the 20s? If you listen to me, it wouldn't be. But other people say the definition of a decade is just any 10-year span, so where it begins is fairly arbitrary. Almost an exact quote of you now.
Yeah, it's culturally versus numerically.
We're on opposite sides of this issue. This is incredible.
It's just so nerdy.
We should spend the whole next decade debating this.
Nerds.
Except it won't begin for another year, because that's when a decade begins. So, all right. Glad we settled this.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled. Anyway, what else of material worth can we discuss?
Well, other than bickering about the date, it's New Year's Eve. The last time we did a New Year's Eve show, actually, I was here by myself. I'm going to read what it says about the show, and we can see how much it's changed. It's New Year's Eve. Emmanuel bemoans the loss of a local FM station to conservative talk. Wondering why left-wing radio isn't more prevalent. The theory that people like to panic. Why the left wing stands in the way of progress more than the right wing.
Wow.
How about that?
That's significant, so scathing.
The significant changes that have taken place in recent years. My goodness.
Not those.
Memories of previous New Year's celebrations. Lessons learned from the Nelson Mandela Memorial. Apologies for the events of last week's show. Well, we do that every week, but I wonder what that was all about.
I think each show is just a successive apology.
Pretty much, yeah, building on the previous ones. Opening some champagne. Did you bring the champagne?
What champagne?
Wow. You had one job, to bring the champagne.
No, I only drink Chandon. It's American.
Okay, well,
that's
you
right.
And the people in France won't let you say champagne.
This is America.
Okay. This is America. That's like Budweiser now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. The champagne of beers. No, actually, that's Coors.
Is that what they call themselves?
Yeah, Coors is... No, Coors is the banquet beer.
I can say something a lot less flattering.
Miller is the champagne
of beers.
It's
like the urine of beers.
Yeah,
what I would say.
Uh-huh.
I'd say it in a different way.
Yeah, though. Miller's the champagne of beers. And, anyway.
An update on New York's gun law. We only had one. Debating the issue of gun control. Wow. Okay, haven't done that in a while. Comparing statistics from various countries. A call from an old listener. Maybe we'll get lucky and get an old listener to call in later.
Or a new one.
The advantage of spending New Year's at home. And optimistic thoughts for the new year. That was from our show, December 31st, 2013, the last time we did a New Year's Eve show from here in the studio. And apparently I was here all by myself. So, I guess not too much has changed. Certainly we have the same critiques and same ways of looking at the world. So that's something, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely stay home and... smoke your DMT in private as you bring in the new year.
What's DMT?
It's a drug, but anyway.
Oh, wow.
It's better to stay off the road.
Uh-huh. Yes, absolutely.
Everyone is probably going to be partying, so just, settle in with your peyote or however you bring in the new year. Uh-huh. Just imbibe with care.
Yes.
And, make sure your dosages and your not imbibing too much.
Well, it's not just about drugs and imbibing and things like that. Be careful with everything you do. Don't shout too loud.
Don't bang pots and pans close to
If you're going to jump up and down and wave your hands around, check to see that somebody isn't standing right next to you, so you don't smack them in the face. That's one of the warnings that does not nearly get enough attention on events like New Year's Eve. things like that, you know? I spent two New Year's, actually maybe three New Year's Eves in Times Square. Yeah, one time a long time ago, and then two in a row for 2000 and 2001, because I wasn't sure then when the decade or the century began, so I decided to cover them both.
I heard that it was like eco-themed this year or climate-themed.
How do you do that?
I don't know. All I remember last year was some athletic company sponsored it when they had like purple and yellow. I'm not going to really say the name, although I've already said a billion brand names in the first 10 minutes. Anyway, the point is apparently they're going to have some kind of climate theme to it, but it's going to be mild, so people won't be freezing. But you actually did this. You didn't do the whole, you know, bathroom thing, and you had like accommodations somewhere.
What's the whole bathroom thing?
Where you have to, like, you know, wear adult diapers or something because you can't move or something.
Oh,
isn't that a thing in Times Square? Like,
no, I don't.
You have to sit for 9 hours or something.
Well, no, I know I didn't have to do that. So I'm trying to think what I did. Okay, first of all, the trick I used, I simply got a hotel room in Times Square, right inside the perimeter. So
that's right.
Okay. I had to have a pass to get into the zone. So I think I was able to come and go as I pleased. But I spent time both years in this little pen that was reserved for handicapped people and cops. And apparently I looked like one of those two groups. So I was just able to sort of ease into that area. It wasn't crowded. It wasn't like I was taking a space from anybody else. And it was pleasant. It was right near the ball dropping. And I remember one year, a friend and I, we had to stay there for about maybe 12 hours in order to be there at the time. But I think we were able to go into a deli or something to relieve ourselves. Or maybe it was so cold that somehow that wasn't an issue. I don't know.
It evaporated.
I don't know. There's all kinds of things that happen, or maybe we just found a place on the street. No, we didn't do that.
No. That's for tourists.
It's surprisingly, it's kind of cool to hear a lot of people cheering, but go to a ball game, you'll get the same basic effect.
Or watch it on TV.
Don't go to a Knicks game, though, because you won't hear any cheering. But, wow. You know, if... a winning team, you could go to a Trump rally too. You hear lots of cheering, but you hear lots of other things too.
Why do you cheer for the new year? I don't really get that.
Well, it's more that you're cheering for the year that's gone. It's over. It can't hurt you anymore.
Is it a matter of perspective?
I think so.
It's different for other, you know, people are just cheering because everybody else is cheering, but they don't really know why.
Yeah, I guess arbitrary is the theme of the night because it's just a date. It's just a number. It's just, why are we gathering at midnight tonight? Because the calendar says so.
I was thinking you would also maybe cheer for having lived through that year to be able to cheer.
Yeah, and let's do it again.
Yeah, maybe I'll get that chance again next year.
But, you know, there's a lot of people that couldn't care less, that stay inside. And I think those are the people that are ignored way too much. The people that they don't buy into all the hoopla. And I respect that. I think that's kind of what we're doing now.
Like the animals care about the new year. Do you see any animals?
Animals don't care about this kind of thing. They don't care about holidays. They don't care about ball games.
I see a lot of dogs dressed up in Halloween costumes.
They care about the 4th of July only because bunch of idiots are lighting fireworks everywhere, but other than that, there's no holiday that animals take an interest in.
Yeah, well, fireworks happen on New Year's too, so second only to hating 4th of July.
Did you hear they're banning fireworks in some German cities? You know how we walk around German cities, which we're not doing this year, but oftentimes kids are like lighting firecrackers and fireworks. It was because of air quality. They're saying because this is polluting the air constantly. It's also kind of frightening when you're walking down the street and something explodes right next to you, but apparently they just take it in stride over there.
Yo, how slow are Germans? This year they came to that epiphany?
Well, you know,
really?
We don't ban it for air pollution. I've never heard that excuse. I've heard you might lose a finger, or no, only the government can light fireworks, because we said so. You know, reasons like that is all I've ever heard here. I've never heard air pollution given as a reason.
I get the same, like, sour, scratchy taste in the back of my throat walking through a train station in Ukraine where they're burning a ton of coal.
That's without fireworks.
Basically the same thing.
That's every day there.
Yeah, if you've ever been to Germany, I'm so proud of them. Good job, Germany.
Well, again, the fireworks are still being lit just by authorities, not by, by people.
And Australia's had a whole thing about it because of the fires.
Well, yeah, those aren't fireworks. Those are fires, yeah.
That's, right, that's, but they had paid for a display, and now they're going to continue with it anyway, but people feel it's inappropriate given the current wildland fire situation.
Yeah, it's not good over there, and they've already celebrated New Year's. I don't know how much celebration they've... Certainly not lighting fireworks over there. Wow. The whole, I guess, continent... Australia is a continent as well as a country. Over 40 degrees Celsius, which is close to 100. That's something. That's a really, I mean, it's not unprecedented. But
hell on earth.
It is hell on earth. And I think we might be seeing more hell on earth with polar ice caps melting and leaders not doing nearly enough. I hope this year was a turning point where maybe people finally are waking up and saying, yeah, we really do have to do something. Maybe there will be a change, but only if we keep the pressure on. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen if we back down in any way. We need a thousand Gretas to step up. And, you know, imagine if that happened, you know, if people were held with their face to the fire, whatever the phrase is.
Feet to the fire.
Feet to the fire, that's it. And or face to, whatever works. You know, they are the ones that are holding this up. Our government right now, one of the biggest culprits. And we have to make sure they realize there's a price to pay for that. A very significant price for them as well as for the entire planet. We can't let them do this. And we need to realize we have power. If one 16-year-old girl from Finland...
Sweden.
I'm sorry. Was that racial or...
Just
or,
move on.
Or geologically insensitive?
No, she doesn't care.
From the Scandinavian area, if she can have this kind of effect, imagine what the rest of us can do if we're as dedicated, if we don't back down as much, you know, if we put our money where our mouths are and various things like that.
Yeah, it's... I'm happy someone is getting traction with this. I've been railing about this stuff forever. Decades ago was working on really innovative stuff that really went nowhere, fizzled. And I still blame wealthy and powerful institutions and the government. I think the government gives way too much cover. When people protest these things, they protect pipelines. They protect these institutions. But why? Why one industry? Why do they get so much cover instead of protecting the people that are actually victimized? And I really hate to see police and military tactics used and private military tactics used. And we saw a lot of that, but that people have galvanized and made it a more cultural dialogue. That's traction. I don't need to be the guy. I don't want to be the guy. And I'm sure there's plenty of other people that would acquiesce. And hey, you know what? The younger generation was always going to be the powerful voices for these things. So it's heartening, and I could go on and on, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right on that. And I don't want it to turn into a generational thing, because while there is truth that people running things are of a certain generation, you can't blame the entire generation for this. There are people I know who are older, who have been speaking out against this all their lives, have been ignored. And there are people who are younger who are just as ignorant as people who are older. So it's not a generational thing.
Right.
If you make it that, then it just creates more lines where they don't need to exist.
Yeah, the only...
And we stop working together.
Yeah, no, I agree. There are younger idiots that are only caring about like changing the oil in their Rolls Royce before the polo match or whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think that the institutions, that cleanliness of and classism, they're clean because they get to stay away from the dirty things they profit from. And a lot of the people that are really not doing well end up with the dirt and the poison and the
right.
And then we all deal with the sort of fall on byproducts of it. And I feel like protecting people that can actually change the way an industry or a company goes, there needs to be a lot more pressure, but also a lot more coolness about that. And
right.
When companies step up, it can be cool, but it's too much lip service and not enough real action. I think that, greenwashing and green advertising and branding is out. Like, forget that. Just do something. Do something real and don't talk about it. We don't need ad campaigns about it. There's kids on the streets. They're tired of learning about it in school. They want to see this actually become the will of our government and society.
It needs to be in the media constantly. It needs to be, you know, if you watch a nightly news program and climate change is not one of the stories, every night there should be a phone call made. There should be letters written. Every night this should be, if not the lead story, a top story for sure, because every day there is something concerning climate change that affects us all. But this is something that is not going away unless we do something about it.
But look at the counter narratives by the petroleum associations, API, all of these interested parties, the petroleum and other industries have done a blitz against
it. They buy ads on these programs, and that's why they are given so much attention. But they're wrong. Okay, it's provable by science. It's provable by all kinds of historical data that you can look at. And at some point, you have to say, okay, they have more money, but that doesn't make them right. And that time is well past. We need to be focusing on this.
Well, and their initiatives ought not be preferred, because a lot of the strategies that they want support for, like carbon sequestration methods that are sort of scientific or chemical based, I mean, that is really only perpetuates their industry. It covers them. It's sort of a Band-Aid over their mess and secures profits for their feedstocks, but it is not them magnanimously embracing other more sustainable or more lateral remediation strategies. They're just it's greenwashing and cover for them. And I am just disgusted by the sort of lip service being paid and the counter narratives. I mean, 10 years ago, decades ago, 2008, CNBC was doing green, specials, MSNBC, all the, cable programs were doing, weeks and months of covering this stuff. It's been a decade of that.
Amidst
the counter narratives. So it's been in the mainstream, and I'm with you. I think every single night we need to be hearing about the impacts, and we are, and it's in specious ways. But
how is there not a climate channel? There should be a climate channel where you can tune to this. This issue. There's a channel, so many home shopping channels. Do you know we get two different game channels? Game show channels. I mean, ridiculous things like that. Yeah, the climate is kind of an important thing. And I don't mean the Weather Channel. I mean actually a scientific, like what Discovery used to be like, but dealing primarily, exclusively with the climate. That is something that we all need to be updated on constantly.
Yeah, that gets really into the science and the sort of explosion of strategies, and really separate the good from the bad, from the fake and the sort of ill-intentioned. We need to be able to sort all of that within that sort of realm and subject matter. Anyway,
okay. Well, I feel rejuvenated. I feel like we're doubling down, and we'll really make climate the lead issue for the next decade, next year, whatever we want to call what happens at midnight. And let's not back down. Oh, it's time for our feature, and get this, folks, we finally have an official title. Sorry about the bureaucracy; it takes time. Welcome to Films of the Year That Was. That's what we're going with. Okay. And the reason we have to make sure that the title is not being used by anybody else, copyright and clearances and all that kind of thing, it takes almost a year to do this. Films of the Year That Was. It's catchy. It rolls off the tongue. This is the feature of the program where we focus on an Academy Award-winning film of a particular year. And we are up to 1964.
It's hard because we've been covering, I think, 3 years at a time, or we've been accelerating through. I think we did 2 years.
Well, we went on a train trip, and and we had to catch up last week. But this week, it's just 1964.
Correct.
So the 1964 winner for the United States was My Fair Lady. And that was a musical. That was something with many, many songs that we knew, songs I hadn't heard in quite a while.
I would say a sort of a continuation of very clever musicals, musicals that don't feel like musicals because it's not one big production into another big production into another big production, uh-huh. like An American in Paris and some of the other films we'd seen that are, I would say, precursors to this. It's sort of a subtle musical, and then it goes into these bits that are often just solos. They're not like big ensemble dance productions, and so it's really... keeps with a storytelling thing, but you have these interspersed these singing acts that move the story along, and it's very seamless.
This starred Audrey Hepburn as Eliza Doolittle and Rex Harrison as Professor Henry Higgins. Do you know the voice of Henry Higgins was the inspiration for Stewie from Family Guy? That's what Seth MacFarlane claims.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you also know that Audrey Hepburn is not related to Catherine Hepburn. I didn't know that. I thought they were related, but they're not. I mean, a name like Hepburn seems like not that many people have it. I don't know any Hepburns, but they're not related. Anyway, the plot is basically... well, it's kind of weird because you have this this woman in London. I believe it's around the 1920s. In that region.
Flower girl.
Yeah, she's a flower girl. She's got a Cockney accent. And she runs across this guy who can basically tell where anybody is from within something like six blocks, just based on their accent, based on a couple of sentences, like where they're from certainly in London, and where they're from in the world by other accents as well.
We're pretty good at that too. I mean,
I don't know if I can really say that somebody. I mean, England has so many accents.
Queens.
Yeah, Queens. Yeah. I don't know. Queens I'm versus Brooklyn Queens. And Staten Island. And
no, that's definitely Queens.
Oh, I'm Queens.
Obviously.
Well, I did grow up in Queens, but still.
I cheated.
I think I'll take offense.
All right, anyway.
basically, what happens is she decides she's interested in improving her station in life. By being taught by this guy who claims he can make her into a lady, somebody who is an aristocrat sounding person, and she'll own her own flower shop then. So she's interested in pursuing that, and basically the film, or at least the first part of the film, is him teaching her how to do this, how to pronounce words differently, like the train in Spain flies mainly in the rain. I don't know, whatever that song was. Of course, she pronounces it completely differently, and they just keep going back and forth, but eventually she gets it. Eventually, just like that, she gets it, and the whole tenor of the film changes. And then there's an intermission, which I miss. You know, films used to have intermissions in the middle of them, especially when they're 3 hours long. And then, you know, the rest of the film is basically dealing with the aftermath of her becoming this new type of a person. Identity issues and is she any better off than she was before? Interesting. I wasn't expecting the second part of the film. I guess I hadn't seen this since I was a little kid. So the whole thing was a good story.
Yeah, and I think there's some themes for like passing, you know, passing as one or another across cultures, across class or mm-hmm. social status, and there's probably some metaphor for. Gender or queerness and other aspects of life that you could glean from the story, but it is I think sort of an ageless tale of trying to move, have some mobility and move out of what you're sort of born with, your lot and so on.
I just thought you could update this story and inject some of those elements that you're referring to and, mm-hmm. and make it a bit more obvious and have a really interesting story about somebody who is trying to be somebody that they really aren't. And does that make them a better person, or are they just turning their back on their own culture and their own upbringing and what they really are? In the end, you kind of, the end kind of was a little baffling to me because they have this big blowout, her and the professor, and he's grown accustomed to her face. But he doesn't really acknowledge her as a human being, and she's determined to just walk away and be her own person. And then at the end of the film, she just shows up at his place, and he wants to know where his slippers are, And that's it. I don't know what to glean from that. She basically just has an about face and decides, okay, I'm going to be with you, and he's going to continue being an ass. And I guess that's okay in 1964.
Yeah, I guess as much as she felt independent and had mobility, she's still dependent to a degree. So I don't know. Make of it what you will, I guess. But it's a well shot, good story, good songs, you know, and iconic songs. Songs you've, you know, I Feel Pretty and just classics.
No, I Feel Pretty is West Side Story.
Oh, I'm sorry.
too many musicals.
No. There was one like that, though. It's similar.
I Could Have Danced All Night. The Rain in Spain, which I mentioned.
What was the guy?
Wouldn't it be Loverly? I haven't heard that song in many, many years.
Yeah.
Do you know, after they filmed that, that is when the JFK shooting happened. So right after they filmed that, that's when someone on stage said, oh, by the way, JFK got shot and everybody got sad. Yeah, it's true. It's a little bit of a factual history there.
Okay.
Yeah. Get Me to the Church on Time. Yes. I'm Getting Married in the Morning.
Okay, they were all so iconic and memorable. I didn't think or remember one and named one from something we already talked about. Uh-huh. That's great. No, it was... really meaningful to me. So let's talk about the foreign film.
The foreign film from 1964 was Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, which basically had Sophia Loren and Marcello Mastroianni in three different roles, three different stories in three different cities in Italy. Adelina of Naples, Anna of Milan, and Mara of Rome.
Yes, all about relationships and women... in different sort of households and status. And
yeah. Well, the first one, Adelina of Naples, she lived in a poorer part of town, had bought furniture, couldn't afford to pay for it. So, could she afford to? No, she could afford to pay for the furniture. What happened was she was selling cigarettes and got fined for that. She couldn't afford the fine. So they came to take her furniture.
Everybody hid it.
Yeah, and the whole neighborhood hid the furniture in their place. So that when they came to get it, oh, you've hidden the furniture. Okay, well, now it becomes a legal matter. You will now go to jail. Well, it turns out that a local lawyer pointed out, you're pregnant, you can't go to jail. And that's the whole premise of that story, where basically she just keeps getting pregnant to avoid going to jail, and she winds up with seven kids. I don't know how that makes things easier, because now you have seven kids to raise, but that is the gist of it, and that's a 30, 40-minute story right there. It was okay, it was funny, but, I mean, the joke was in the first 10 minutes. Second story, Anna of Milan, basically this rich woman driving, what was she driving?
I'm not quite sure what vehicle it was, but she kept hitting things.
Wasn't it a Rolls Royce? I think it was a Rolls Royce.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, she was a terrible driver, kept bumping into other cars and knocking things off the side. And she's basically with this guy, common guy, I guess is the only way you would describe it, who she picked up the night before. She has a husband who's a mega-rich industrialist, but basically she just wants to be with this guy. And it seems like she's being sincere and honest until he is driving, and he winds up almost hitting a kid because the kid's standing in the middle of the road and wrecking the car. And that's when her true aristocrat upbringing comes out, and she starts yelling at him for damaging the car and saying, you should have run over the kid, he doesn't matter, et cetera, et cetera. And that's when he realizes that she is really a terrible person, and he just basically sits on the side of the road while some other guy comes, picks her up, and takes her away.
In like a little sporty car. She just doesn't care about anything and leaves.
Uh-huh. That sporty car I read about is really rare. It's worth millions of dollars.
What even was it?
I don't even know what it was.
Jaguar. I know her car was a Rolls.
Yeah.
Because the emblem was a Spirit of Ecstasy.
And then the final story, Mara of Rome, she basically is a call girl, prostitute, who basically receives men at her apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this young kid next door, by next door, the balcony over, so people can climb over balconies to like visit each other. And he is studying to be a priest, but he becomes infatuated with her. His grandmother, who he's staying with, knows exactly what Mara is up to. Does not approve at all, and is determined to have her evicted, kicked out, penalized in some way, and they become enemies until the grandmother comes and visits her and is in tears because the grandson is abandoning the priesthood only because of the conversation he had with Mara. So she basically helps the grandmother to keep the kid from straying. And it's kind of a sweet story, I guess, but kind of a weird story at the same time.
Why three in one film?
I don't know. But yesterday, today, and tomorrow, it's not really a story from the past, present, and future. It's basically the same era, I think. It's an interesting look at Italy, different cities in Italy, so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Sort of also that these people are the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, right? They're not changing, like the main characters. They're living their life. The woman who's, the aristocratic woman, the woman who's trying to avoid being jailed, and the woman who's sorting out this neighbor fiasco. I mean, they're not changing, right? They're the same as they ever were, and that may be something. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to make of the title or the compendium of three stories.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I give you that. It's a little disjointed, but it did win the best film of 1964 for foreign films.
That was color, right?
It was color. Yeah. It was color. Not the sharpest color, but definitely enough to make you interested in the places that it was. And it was a good window into that particular world. So that is Films of the Year That Was for 1964. I'll turn off the projector until next week. All right. We had some unpleasant things happen this week that kind of illustrate the times that we live in. We had a stabbing at Hanukkah celebration up in, I think, Rockland County.
Yeah.
We had a shooting in a church. Let me just address the shooting
in Texas.
The Texas shooting, and it turned out that parishioners, or at least a security guard in the church, was able to shoot the shooter, and that's good. You know, it's good that they were able to stop him from shooting more people. Unfortunately, this is being used as evidence that what we need is for everybody in churches to be armed now, so that this can become the norm in the future when there are shooters. And, when you have people who are trained, as this guy was, to take down somebody like this, the results will generally be positive. When you have everybody with guns, you have what you have now, people living in fear. And I just fear, including the president, people are not seeing that. They simply want to arm everybody and not realize that this is not normal. This is not where we should be. We should not have to assume there's going to be a shooting inside a church. It should be a safe place. And the fact that it's not is evidence that something is failing. And if we don't turn attention to that, it's just going to keep failing and getting worse.
Yeah. Yeah, you have melee, and then it's like, okay, let God sort it out. Everybody shot everybody. So whomever sort of looks like they could live, then okay, then, you know, that's how let the chips fall where they may. That's a very cavalier attitude mm-hmm. for something that serious. And I, again, like every time I think about this, I think about, people talk about rights. What about my right not to be shot? How about that right?
That's not in the Constitution.
When does that ever come up?
No,
what about my right not to get got?
The Second Amendment says that you don't have that
right. I don't
want
to hear about that. No. Life,
no,
liberty,
right,
and the pursuit of happiness.
Uh-huh.
And part of being happy is not getting shot.
If you can ban smoking in a church, I think you can ban shooting in a church.
Anyway, one thing I do... True. One thing
that's not unwise.
One thing I want to say about the Texas thing is that immediately I was listening to Washington Journal, as I do on C-SPAN, of course, and the callers immediately that morning mm-hmm. were talking about how, sweet Texas, they had guns and I'm
okay.
sorry.
Stop with the accent, because not everybody with that accent is ignorant.
True.
True. And a lot of people with Queens accents, if I do say so myself. In fact, the damn president is from Queens.
Let me make
my point. I grew up a block away from the president. I can't believe that.
I'm sorry for your upbringing.
Well, I didn't grow up. I was 8, but still.
The lack thereof.
Could have done something.
But the point is, they're saying because they were armed, nothing happened. Well, turns out two people did die.
Yeah.
But they hadn't had that reported yet.
And
so they were saying nobody died because there were guns. No, two people did die.
Yeah.
You just didn't know it yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And something to point out, I mentioned the stabbing. Well, guess what? Nobody died in the stabbing because it's a stabbing, not a shooting. If that had been a gun, it would have been very, very different. And, you can say that gun laws are effective or not effective. It's it's obvious in New York it's harder to get a gun, and that alone is able to mitigate these outcomes somewhat. Sure, somebody could still do something horrible, but even that little bit of difficulty is often enough to change the weapon to something less deadly. Still a huge problem, still something that cannot in any way be minimized. But again, imagine if that was a gun instead. And in Texas, probably would have been, because it's so damn easy and everybody has them. Here, you had something really horrible that happened. You had a stabbing inside, I believe, a rabbi's house up in Rockland, from some idiot who was anti-Semitic and saying all kinds of ignorant things. And then you have other idiots. And by other idiots, I mean people like our representative Lee Zeldin. Oh, my God, this guy. I just, there's not enough time. We only have 10 minutes left. Here's what he tweeted, all right, right after this happened. New York officials silent in the rise, in the face of rising anti-Semitic attacks are part of the problem. Those who prop up BDS, support cashless bail, embrace activist anti-Semites like Linda Sassoor, and don't support our great law enforcement enough are all part of the problem here as well. In other words, all the talking points that he wants to focus upon, he's just sort of pulling into this horrible tragedy for his own purposes. What an idiot. It's just so offensive that he does something like this. BDS, I got news for you, pal. That's got nothing to do with any of this. BDS is basically boycotting Israel because of their actions against Palestinians.
Their ethnically pure state.
Yeah, things like that. You know?
The ironically ethnically pure state.
Things that have nothing to do with Jewish religion have to do with the Israeli state. They are not the same thing. More on that in a second. Cashless bail and attacking Linda Sassoor, one of the most compassionate people that I know of, and basically just roping her into this. She has spoken out more against anti-Semitism than Lee Zeldin has ever done, and she has done more to fight anti-Semitism than he has ever done. It's just disgusting. This is the guy that represents us, this ignoramus that is full of hatred and prejudice, and yes, anti-Semitism. Yeah, you can be Jewish and be anti-Semitic if you're ignorant and you push policies that hurt the Jewish people, which is exactly what he does day after day. Does nothing for the people here. It's pathetic. I want to look at a story. I just saw this, actually, when we came into the studio. A Muslim teenager from Brooklyn showed amazing bravery after he saw an Orthodox Jewish woman get punched by a man on the subway. He helped police catch the suspect. He was all the way in the back. I was just looking at him like... I see you can't hide, you coward. And it wasn't until 31-year-old Rayvon Jones got off the B68 bus, agitated and belligerent, that 17-year-old Ahmad Khalifa realized he was standing up to a guy nearly a foot taller and twice his age. But none of that mattered at the time. He was just doing the right thing. She was dressed like religiously. You could just tell she was Jewish and I'm Muslim. And people were just confused. Like, you just helped a Jewish lady. Like, wow, it has nothing to do with the fact that she's Jewish. I just helped a lady. This guy gets it. The average New Yorker gets it. And you will see Muslim people helping Jewish people all the time. And to simply fall back, like Lee Zeldin does, on hatred and anti-Muslim rhetoric, and assuming people are evil because they disagree with you on political issues, that is as disgusting as it gets. And I saw so much condemnation of this, so much condemnation, but the vast majority of it focused on the issue itself, focused on the anti-Semitism that is prevailing in our country right now and ways we have to fight that, focusing on the specific horror that took place upstate. And that is what you have to do, not rope in other political things that you feel are convenient to somehow attach to this. BDS, let me tell you about BDS. You know, if you go to Williamsburg, we drive through there sometimes, you see Hasidic people all over the place.
It's a really cool part of town.
It's amazing.
It's unique and so interesting. Just the people watch.
It's one of the wonders of New York, just all the different cultures that are there. And this is something that, you know, whenever people visit who've never been to New York before, I always make a point of driving through Williamsburg or even walking through Williamsburg so that you can see, yeah, it's not the way you imagine it to be. This is a different world. whether you agree with their interpretation of religion or not, that's not the point. The point is, these are different cultures. This is what this country is all about. And this is, pretty amazing. But, you know, this is what people like Lee Zeldin will never understand. The Jewish people are multicultured within their own culture. And what you see in Williamsburg, it's known as Satmar. It's part of the Hasidic culture, but it's a Satmar
sect, right?
Yeah, sect. And they're, guess what? They are anti-Zionist. They are completely anti-Zionist. This guy, Teitelbaum, was their leader. And basically, he fought the Holocaust. He fought the establishment of the State of Israel. Yes, he is anti-Zionist. Israel. The whole sect is anti-Israel. The continued existence of Israel is considered a major sin in itself and would unavoidably lead to all kinds of further woes for the Jewish people. Teitelbaum's rabbinic authority, wealthy supporters in the United States, made him the leader of the radical anti-Zionist flank of the Orthodox Jewish world. He adopted a policy of utter non-recognition towards the State of Israel, banning his adherents residing there for voting in the elections or affiliating in any way with the state's institutions. He basically...
distanced. Yeah.
It's fascinating. But you realize that it's just so much more complex than what we are taught on media coverage of all this. Now, in keeping with the traditional beliefs of Satmar, Zalman Teitelbaum, who I believe is one of the current leaders, he basically is a strong opponent of Zionism. He's closely affiliated with the Jerusalem-based anti-Zionist Ida Ha-Chairidis, or I'm definitely pronouncing wrong. He has referred to the State of Israel as this generation's Amalek and said that the Zionists came from the seed of Amalek. I don't know what Amalek is. I'm sorry. I should have done more research on this. But he basically says there has never been such a sect that caused so much damage to the Jewish people. He's referring to the Zionists. He opposes the proposed draft of Haredi men by the Israeli Defense Forces and has encouraged resistance against the draft decree. We must fight it uncompromisingly so that such ideas won't even cross their minds. He regularly raises money for impoverished anti-Zionist Jews in Israel who refuse to accept government benefits. So that is a little bit of multiculturalism for you. It's not black and white.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for the nuance. Yeah. I know it takes time, and that was worth spending a little time just opening up a bit.
I had to change the toner in the printer for this. It's a lot of... a lot of things.
Back to the regular scheduled stupidity, but
hatred is hatred.
Yeah,
and I think everybody gets that. Whether you're Jewish, Muslim, Catholic, Protestant, whatever you are, people realize that. And especially in a melting pot like New York or a patchwork quilt like New York, I prefer that. You'll see people standing up for each other, and bigots like Lee Zeldin are not tolerated. So I just wanted to say that because it just annoyed me so much to see that kind of hatred being spewed out. And this guy represents us here. It's just, let's hope 2020 is the last year we have to deal with him.
Let's not let ignorance win.
No. It's been a good year for ignorance, I'll say that.
Yeah, it's been on a roll, but can't be forever.
Hey, we lost a giant this week. Neil Innes, the brains behind the Ruddles. Man, this guy was a legend. He never got the credit he deserved, I don't think. Basically, if you've seen the Ruddles, if you've seen a documentary about this fake group that was very similar to the Beatles.
I've started to watch it. I never got through it, though.
It's such attention to detail, musically as well.
It's kind of like the Spinal Tap of...
It predated Spinal
Right,
Tap.
Right, it's way before
Spinal Tap is like the Ruddles of its era.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I apologize.
He worked with Monty Python, and he also was part of the Bonzo Dog Band in the late 1960s. Check out the guy. So much amazing stuff. We're going to play a song as our outro called Unfinished Words. And I just want to focus on the lyrics because it was always about the lyrics and the music because he was able to mimic Beatles music so incredibly from era to era. Little tiny inside jokes that only musicians might get. But the lyrics, too, were just genius and just funny enough where you wonder, is this supposed to be a joke or is this, you know, real? Lyrics like unfinished words, flying like birds, high in the sky, above my deck chair. I mean, with a Beatles sound to it, that is just, to me, brilliant. But there are so many other songs. If you're able to get the Ruddles first album, please do. The second album, Archaeology, which is basically a lampoon of the Beatles anthology. Some great songs on there as well. That's going to do it for us tonight. Please write to us, otw@2600.com. And we'll be back next week, hopefully, in the new decade.
It's just another year.
Good night.
Kids, it's Finn on Finn's Revolution. It is New Year's Eve. We're going to be partying up. We're going to be counting down some songs. We're going to be listening to some of the best of the year and rocking out. Stay tuned to me and Rashmi till the 9 o'clock hour. See ya.
Thank you. around this entire world and get a ramp up to every boy and girl. When Christmas comes, we'll sing together that work won't be done. When Christmas comes, make it forever.
Yeah, that's right. Graham Parker right here, a classic which holds up brilliantly, New Year's Revolution from his New Year's Eve EP. And yeah, so Happy New Year, guys. And we're going to be playing a bunch of New Year's oriented tunes, but plus some great dance songs and some great material that's gone by in this great new year. We started off that set there, of course, as always, with The Prisoner, appropriately, and then Elvis Costello from the Party soundtrack, the title track, and then Anne Margaret gave us a New Year's Eve greeting, and Graham Parker, New Year's Revolution. There's a song I missed last week while doing my Christmas show, and I hope you all enjoyed it. By the Frauk Collective, and very Waitsian and beautiful song. And our friend Heather Dawson is the singer. And let's give it a little listen right now. This is called The Christmas Wish, right here, WUSB.